Well, I think we could say that we wanted to prove that extinction is not forever, at least not for genes. And through conversations with my colleagues at the Victoria Museum in Melbourne, I discovered that they had not one, but several thylacine or Tasmanian tiger pouch young. And so I thought, wouldn't it be exciting if we could actually take some of that material and clone some genes from the Tasmanian tiger? And so Dr. Joan Dixon, who at that time was the curator of mammals, made it possible for me to get a permit to come and take some samples from those precious 100-year-old Tasmanian tiger pouch young.
And what sort of genes did you extract? Presumably not the lot.
No, we only focused on a couple of genes, and I'll hand over to Andrew to tell you exactly how the extraction was made. But before I do so, we wanted to point out that, of course, the Tasmanian tiger is thought to be extinct. I would love to see it still alive somewhere in Tasmania, but I doubt that that's the case. And the last one died in captivity in Hobart in 1936. But fortunately, there are lots of samples all around the world in museums, and in those days they fixed everything in alcohol, which is okay for DNA.
Which genes did you extract?
So initially we were wanting to have a look at quite a wide diversity of genes, but once we extracted the DNA, we actually saw that it was quite degraded. So it was broken up into very many small pieces, which is quite common from ethnol-fixed specimens, especially of this age. And so from that, we sort of had to switch our focus to looking at particularly small genes that we might be able to pull out in one piece of DNA from the thylacine rather than trying to piece lots of little pieces together from the fragmented genome. And so we wanted to really look at something that had a very nice readout that we could measure so that we could assess whether the function of this gene was actually restored. So for this instance, we've actually looked at a gene that we know is expressed in collagen. So it's expressed in developing chondrocytes, which are the cells that form the skeleton or the bone. And so in this way, we'd be able to then have a look to see whether we can actually get that same element from the thylacine and then see if we can get it to be expressed in a mouse in the bone cell. So see if we could actually activate that sequence and resurrect its function and then see whether it had the same function as we presume it does from looking at other species.
So you look at the barcode and you see, ah, that's the one for collagen, and so you recognise it that way.
Yes, that's right. So in that way, we've been able to look at a number of extinct genomes. So we can look at the genome level and just compare sequences to known genes. And from that, we can kind of infer what we think the gene might be doing. But what our experiment has done here is this is the first time that we've actually then taken that information and then actually physically examined the functional properties of that piece of DNA. So before this, we've only been able to sort of interpret what we think a gene might be doing, but from comparisons. But with this experiment, we can actually then actually see what it was doing in the thylacine.
How do you put it into the mouse?
So we actually get the piece of DNA from the thylacine, and then we inject it into very early mouse eggs, and it will get integrated into the genome and then expressed along with the rest of the genes within the mouse genome. So the mouse just goes along its normal embryonic development, and then when that gene would normally be turned on in a thylacine, it will get switched on in the mouse, and we can see exactly what it's doing.
I've got this terrible picture of a mouse that's got the size of a thylacine, in other words, like a small dog. It didn't happen like that, did it?
No.
And in fact, the gene had a very convenient marker dye on it, so that when the gene is expressed and you stain for this dye, you get blue. So these mice had little blue fingers and blue arms and blue tips of their noses and so on. Everywhere where there was collagen, the mice turned blue.
How convenient. And were they in any way hampered by the fact that they had this foreign gene in them?
No, it doesn't affect their normal development whatsoever. So the mice themselves have their normal collagen gene and they will produce bone and go ahead completely normally. This will just, it just shows what that fragment could have done in a thylacine embryo, but it doesn't manipulate what's actually happening to the mouse development itself.
Now, I must ask here, you know, there was an experiment a few years ago at the Australian Museum led by Dr. Mike Archer to extract DNA similarly, and he had the ambition of making a resurrected thylacine. Now, this got nothing to do with his experiment, has it?
No, this in fact, our sampling of the thylacine preceded his discovery of the one in the Sydney Museum by some years, but he was intending to try and clone the Tasmanian tiger, but it would have been extremely difficult because not only is the DNA very fragmented, but we actually don't know how many chromosomes a Tasmanian tiger had. And so if you had have got the entire genome and you'd managed to assemble it in the right sequence, the right order, it would have been very hard to know which ones to put on which chromosomes. And then you would have needed an egg to put those genes into. And I suppose the best egg to use would have been a Tasmanian devil egg, because it's the closest living relative and it's now the top carnivore replacing the thylacine. But I guess that could never happen now with the Tasmanian devil tumour disease.